Hello, I'm Yvette Samuel. This is number 0319, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0319. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Daniel Morgan Jones, CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism, is back to talk about a new Star Wars themed song that they just released.
We decided that we would release this Star Wars themed song so that we could help promote the launch of the new website of the church and the fact that the church now has like celebrity members and things. So we recorded the song, all Star Wars themed, and decided that it was time to release it, and we put it up on the internet for everyone to download and share the love.
Letha Marchetti, author of Dragons and Daisies, talks about kids' baffling behaviors.
You come in and your son has pulled all of the cushions off the couch and he's jumping onto them. And you tell him, son, we don't do this in our home. And you turn around and he's jumping on the bed. And the parents scratching their head, you know, why doesn't this kid get it? That's a baffling behavior.
Nick Giannoulis, creator of the Fun Department, wants you to have fun at work.
These things need to be all ongoing, continuous, brief, and also very cost effective. We do not encourage people to spend a lot of money on elaborate productions and all that. It should feel very natural and organic in the workplace to have fun. And so we help design these programs for people and companies and, you know, very effectively help them implement these programs. And that's what drives the business results, not an event. Fun, like most things in your business, is a process, not an event.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0319 was Yvette Samuel, a niece of mine, also a medical office assistant at Somerset West Community Health Center. That's in Ottawa. Thank you very much, Yvette, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Two inmates at the Spokane County, Washington jail are being investigated for attempted escape after jail staff noticed a bed sheet rope hanging from a cell window just before dawn. We looked across to the jail and there was a whole bunch of sheets tied together dangling down from the building, said Ken Coburn, who saw it from an adjacent building. That's like the oldest trick in the book, next to putting a file in a cake. But it was unlikely that the two inmates would have been successful in their escape. While the window was 56 inches tall, it was only 4 7/8 inches wide. Yeah, I guess they thought they had a chance because, you know, they're pinheads. Seriously. 22-year-old Erica Kenny and 28-year-old Shanice White are facing child abuse charges over the care they provided to children at Lightbridge Academy in Cranford, New Jersey. We have assisted the prosecutor's office from the start of its investigation into this matter, said Lightbridge Academy in a statement. According to investigators, Kenny and White used the movie Fight Club as an example and shot video as they encouraged the children to fight each other on the playground. About a dozen children, boys and girls between the ages of 4 and 6, just fighting, throwing each other onto the ground, hitting each other, said Union County Prosecutor Grace Park. Upon learning of the allegations, Lightbridge Academy immediately suspended and then later fired Kenny and White. According to authorities, the investigation started after Kenny shared clips of the fights with friends on social media. Well, you see, right there is the problem. You know, second rule of Fight Club is you shall not post Fight Club videos on social media. I mean, everybody knows that. Officers were dispatched to a home in Long Beach, California after receiving a report of a sign posted at a house that a passerby found to be alarming and a threat to the community. The scary terrorist threat on the sign read, "Sometime around midday, Temple and Third is declared a war zone. We will not care if you are unarmed. If you enter the area, you may be exposed to large amounts of dehydrogen monoxide. It would be better if you came prepared. Safety Third. Now, dehydrogen monoxide, of course, refers to a molecule made of two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom, H2O, also known as water. Police cited the homeowner, Tammy Hall, for posting illegal signage, but did not take her into custody. My kids always look forward to one really big water fight where we just call out all our friends. They put on war paint and everything for it, Hall said. That won't stop. I just won't put any warning signs out with chemical compounds on it. I'm just glad we didn't list the side effects of dehydrogen monoxide. That would have made it worse. Well, you know, folks, over 840,000 people die every year from dehydrogen monoxide-related causes. You have been warned. 42-year-old Mike Owings of Draper's Barbecue in Carlisle County, Kentucky, and 35-year-old Mary Berry, who lives in Kentucky but was working with Firehouse Barbecue of Florida, were sharing a cooker. It was the 5th annual Kentucky Barbecue Festival, but matters between Owings and Berry were getting less than festive. They were arguing about the cooker, and then Owings allegedly threw a brisket at Berry. He told Danville police he didn't intend to hurt anyone, but police say the $100, 200-degree-plus piece of beef burned Berry on the neck and shoulder. Berry was treated at the scene, and Owings was charged with a misdemeanor. Yeah, a brouhaha over brisket. This is the ultimate beef, isn't it? And what's that old saying? Something about too many cooks? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 82-year-old Nev Cooper, who's retired from the Royal Air Force in the UK, loves boats. He built a 2-foot replica of an RAF Vosper crash boat and was about to sail it on its maiden voyage on a local pond in Bottlesford, Wiltshire. No can do, says the Urchfont Parish Council. There are ducks in that pond, and they might be scared by a boat in the water. However, they ruled it's still okay for children to sail boats in the pond. Yes, they might fly off, concedes Cooper, but 5 minutes later they will be back. Besides, he adds, in the past I have found that the ducks even tend to follow these boats around. Cooper says he might defy the order. What are they going to do about it? The police would think it was a joke if they were called. The council warned him in writing not to push it, even though, quote, we accept that this is not enforceable by law. Still, they felt you would understand our position and act accordingly and reasonably. Well, why? You're not. I mean, seriously. Anyway, you know, if the parish council really wanted to get rid of the RAF Vosper, they could always counter-battle and deploy a miniature German U-boat. Just a thought. I'm putting that out there. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, shall we? We've had Daniel Morgan Jones on the program before. He's the highest-ranking member of the Church of Jediism in the UK. We spoke to him back in 2010 when they were recruiting Americans. Well, now they have just released a Star Wars song in aid of promoting the Jedi Church and the new film that's coming out. So we thought it was a good time to invite Daniel back on the show. But first, here's a little taste of the song. It's called Journey of a Jedi. Taking my time, gonna get it right. A bit of Journey of a Jedi, and Daniel Morgan Jones joins us now via Skype from the UK. Hi, Daniel. Nice to have you back on the show with us.
Hi, Peter. It's nice to be here with you guys again.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So first of all, let's bring us up to date. As I said, when we last spoke to you, you were recruiting Americans. How did that go?
Yeah, really well. We've got quite a big reach now in the United States. So I think we're a good few hundred thousand strong now worldwide. So I think maybe 20,000 to 30,000 in the U.S. So
excellent. So now, as I mentioned in the introduction, and we played just a little bit of it, you've released this Star Wars song. Tell us about this.
Okay, so we basically, I'm in a band who all church members, and we decided that we would release this Star Wars themed song so that we could help promote the launch of the new website of the church and the fact that the church now has like celebrity members and things. So we recorded the song, all Star Wars themed, and decided that it was time to release it, and we put it up on the internet for everyone to download and share the love.
Now, one of the folks, I know I asked you this the last time we were on the program, but you know, bringing this up to date, what are the folks at Lucas World, and I guess now Disney, what do they say about the Church of Jediism? Have you heard from them?
Well, no, we haven't heard from them yet. I mean, I did an interview with Time magazine a few years back, and nobody got in contact with me from then. So hopefully it's all good, and they don't see it as kind of like any infringement. So fingers crossed anyway.
Because, you know, Lucasfilm is one thing, but the folks at Disney, they can be kind of ruthless.
Yeah. Well, I do know that. But, touch wood, I guess. So far, we've had no lawsuits or anything like that. Hey, you know what would be even nicer is if Disney did contact us and they would like to use the song for something. That would be pretty cool.
You mentioned that you now have celebrities in the church. Can you tell us who some of the celebrities are?
Yeah, sure. I guess one of the biggest celebrities we got is a guy called Thomas Ian Nicholas, and he's a friend of mine as well now. And he is a star of, ironically, he's a star of the new film called Walt Before Disney, but he's more famously known for being in American Pie as a character called Kevin Myers. He's also in Rookie of the Year, and where he plays Chicago Cubs, I think, in that. And he's also in a film when he was a young boy called Radio Flyer. So he's quite a... He's quite a well-known actor in Hollywood.
Okay, so getting back to the song, who wrote the song?
So I wrote the lyrics with a couple of other guys in the band, and then we all kind of put the music together, just hanging out, jamming out, different types of things. So,
besides promoting the Church of Jediism and talking about Star Wars, you also took a dig in the song at Scientology. The lyric goes, it's all based on prophecy, this isn't Scientology. Obviously you wrote the song, so you knew what you were doing. What brought that about?
Well, I think it's quite funny. I mean, because all the way through the whole growth of the Church of Jediism, we were always compared to Scientology because, you know, sci-fi based religions, and etc. So we thought it was really funny because, you know, we were always compared to Scientology, and then Scientologists kind of got, you know, they're very, basically one of their members, the Church of Scientology, this is quite a big story, but one of their members of the London office tried to infiltrate our organization and destroy it and all kinds of crazy nonsense. So we decided that, you know, as a little bit of a, two fingers up to them, we decided to put just a little line in there to see how they'd feel about it. But, it's just a bit of fun, and I hope they see it in the light of fun, not really anything more sinister. But it's quite funny because they've got celebrity members, and we've also got celebrity members, so I think ours are a little less crazy.
Well, it's interesting you say you hope they take it all in a little bit of fun. How can you honestly say that when you just mentioned they tried to infiltrate you and destroy you from within?
Yeah, I know. Okay, well, that was a pretty crazy time. And it cost us a lot of money and legal stuff. But, I in the long run, I think I look back and I go, well, you know, they didn't succeed, so I'll just leave them to it because they look stupid at the end of the day.
What exactly did they try to do?
Basically, one of their members became like a really high-ranking member of our Office of Mission Administration, and was in charge of all kinds of stuff like the database, the web hosting, the members, the International Members Association, and all kinds of crazy nonsense. So he just tried to really destroy and cause all kinds of feuds. And then he did loads of legal entanglements, like tried to write different types of words through the Office of Mission Administration through our organization. And then we got into all kinds of crazy diplomatic issues with other Jedi organizations because of this. And you know, it was just a big old mess. I mean, I could stay for hours talking about how mad it was, but...
You know, when you think about it, that is actually very Star Wars. That's like finding the weakness in the Death Star.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But, you know, we managed to save it.
So are you expecting any fallback now? I mean, you just said you hope to take it in fun. But, you know, you've got this song out now. You've mentioned them in the song. If they're willing to infiltrate you to try and destroy you from within, who knows what they'll do now?
Yeah, that is true. Do you know, well, we haven't heard from them since, and I'm entirely sure if they've heard the song. I couldn't tell. I mean, the tabloids haven't picked up on this yet, so I suppose I'm going to put the press release out to the mass press in the UK soon, and when they hear about it, we might get some backlash. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Mm. So tell us a little bit, for those who don't remember what the last time we were on, tell us a little bit about the Church of Jediism, how it got started, and do you have weekly... gatherings like other churches do, that kind of thing?
Okay, well, basically, it started because my brother and I, who were really into Star Wars, and we wanted to do something kind of cool, and, you know, we weren't really religious before this, you know, no formal religious background. So we decided that it would be a cool idea to learn a bit of Jediism, and we realized there wasn't anything online, you know, there was nothing that we could find, so we decided to set it up ourselves and find people who were like-minded, and we did it. But the growth really came from the fact that we set up a website, and we had a few members, and it was okay, and we had like a couple of meetings here in the start, and then we put a website up, and a national tabloid here in the UK picked it up and was like, yeah, it's an interesting story. So they ran the story after playing with the idea for about a week, and then they put the story live, and it went out in the national press on a Sunday afternoon, and we didn't hear anything from anybody about it. Nothing happened, and that evening we were sitting down saying, oh well, that would have been really cool, because, you know, it was a national tabloid, but nobody kind of messaged us apart from one guy in America, which was kind of ironic because it was a UK tabloid. But then, like, the day after, we were rudely woken up at 8:30 in the morning by the BBC, were like at my door, and it was like paparazzi everywhere, and then we were on like the TV live in the afternoon about 4:00, and then right up until the following morning at 2:00 in the morning, we were on ABC News Australia on the radio. So it was kind of instantly a worldwide phenomena as soon as we pressed go on that press release. So that is pretty much how it all got started. But we do have like it's not like a weekly thing. It is and it isn't. Some members do meet up weekly in accordance with the documents that we provide to the members. But there's also a lot of the members do training through our website, which is our primary source of educating themselves through the teachings of the church and the scripture and stuff. So you can go onto like our website, and we've got like a library section. You can download some free PDFs, or you can buy a couple of ebooks on there. Yeah, and there's loads of resources, Jedi-related resources on there. It's really cool. And it also lists all celebrity members as well.
So you've done the song, so obviously you are kind of excited at the fact that a new movie is coming out, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you feel about the previous six films that are out there? I'm sure you look at them. I mean, the last three have kind of been raked over the critics' coals. Do you believe in that as well?
Well, the last three were a bit unusual. I mean, Jar Jar Binks wasn't the strongest character, and there was a lot that could have been done with it that wasn't done. But at the same time, I do believe that the last three films that were made, the 1, 2, and 3, they actually had quite a nice portrayal of the Jedi Knights in it, and I think that there was a lot more of them in it. You know, you've seen the temple, and you've seen the training, and you've seen the council meetings and stuff. Of course, when we look back at A New Hope and stuff, you know, Yoda's he's in exile, and Obi-Wan's hiding, and it's kind of like there's not much of the Jedi there really. But with the newer ones, it kind of really gives you that story across of what they do and what they're actually about, which I do admire.
So I would assume you'll be there first day, first showing when the new one comes out.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be there, and I think I might be doing something with Empire Cinema. They wanted me to do some stuff with them, but I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm waiting to hear back from the PR guys. But yeah, so we might be doing something with those around the release, so that'd be quite cool.
Okay, so Disney has to be on board with that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I spoke to the PR guy, and Disney weren't involved in the conversations we've had. So currently, it's just me and Empire that might be doing something. But maybe actually that maybe an entanglement with Disney. That's why we're currently just still in talks. But who knows? I don't know yet.
Until the frozen hand of Walt puts a stop to it.
Yeah, the cryogenically frozen hand of Walt. Or just his head, apparently, that's what I've heard.
Daniel, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Anthony.
People can find out more information by going to your Church of Jediism website, which is churchofjediism.org.uk. Thanks for being on the show with us once again.
You're welcome. It's been awesome. Thank you.
Daniel Morgan Jones, the CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism. Again, you can check out their website. You can just go to our website, thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0319, and you'll find the link to their site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about kids' baffling behavior. Plus, we'll discuss having fun at work. Of course, there will be an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And, of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Maya Donnelly awoke to what sounded like thunder in the early morning hours, but dismissed it as a typical monsoon storm and went back to sleep. Later that morning, she looked in the carport at her home in Nogales near the U.S.-Mexico border and saw pieces of wood on the ground. She found a bulky bundle wrapped in black plastic, and inside was roughly 26 pounds of marijuana, a package that authorities say was worth about $10,000 and likely was dropped accidentally by a drug-smuggling aircraft. "It's all right on top of our dog's house," Donnelly said of the September 8th incident. "It just made a perfectly round hole through our carport." Living near the border, Donnelly said she assumed the object was drugs. She immediately called her husband, Bill, who told her to call 911. The couple said officers who responded told them an ultralight aircraft smuggling marijuana from Mexico had probably let part of its cargo go early by accident before dropping the rest farther north. Nogales Police Chief Derek Arnson said it's the first time in his 3-year tenure that he's ever seen a load of drugs hitting a building. "Someone's definitely made a mistake, and who knows what the outcome of that mistake might be for them." Now, police are trying to determine whether the bundle was transported by an aircraft or a pilotless drone. Such runs usually occur at night. You know, I'll bet that Maya will probably spend the next several nights sitting on her roof with night vision binoculars and a shotgun. Are they sure it's a drone or a plane, though? I mean, is it not possible that it could be like a Wile E. Coyote Acme kind of thing and somebody had a giant catapult that was, like, off target? Just, you know, a thought. Anyway, 33-year-old Daniel Dion of Daytona Beach, Florida, went to the police to report that his former mother-in-law had called him with an offer to pay him to be a hitman to kill the man his ex-wife was now dating. Dion says 50-year-old Pamela Vannersdale told him that she would provide a 25-caliber pistol that he could use to pop him in the head and chest, and suggested that he dump Dylan Lovelace's body in South Carolina. Investigators said Vannersdale's husband handed over the pistol, which was indeed a 25-caliber gun. Her apparent motive? She doesn't like the 22-year-old Lovelace because he's homeless, and she thinks he infected her grandchildren with lice. Lice, you know, is easily treated. Hatred for other human beings, much more difficult to cure. Yeah. Gee, do you think Daniel is now looking back at his relationship with his ex-mother-in-law and wondering if she ever wanted to put a hit out on him? And by the way, is the aptly named Lovelace still in a relationship with said girlfriend? Curious minds want to know. Well, moving right along, a Wisconsin man who accidentally shot his roommate while teasing a cat with a laser sight was fined $50 after pleading guilty to a weapons crime. 22-year-old Vaughn Rothering will pay a total of $591, including court costs, and will be eligible to have the felony conviction for injury by negligent handling of a dangerous weapon expunged. According to the criminal complaint, Rothering and his roommate were on the porch of their residence when Rothering let their cat chase the laser from his 9mm pistol. He said he was spinning the gun in his hand when it went off and struck his roommate in the ankle. Prosecutors requested only a fine in return for Rothering's guilty plea, acknowledging the incident was an accident and he has no criminal history. If not expunged, his felony conviction would prohibit him from possessing firearms. He will also be required to pay restitution, though the amount has yet to be determined. You could have easily killed your friend, La Crosse County Circuit Judge Ramona Gonzalez told Rothering. You've probably punished yourself more than we could ever punish you. I feel terrible about it, said Rothering. The cat, by the way, was unharmed. Yes, but I'm sure the cat is plotting some kind of revenge. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, one of the remaining 116 Guantanamo Bay prisoners, a man suspected of having been close to Osama bin Laden, has a dating profile on Match.com captioned, "Detained but ready to mingle." That's what the man's lawyer, Carlos Warner, told Al Jazeera America. Mohammed Rahim Al-Afghani has recently proclaimed his innocence, and Warner released a series of charming letters from his client intended to humanize him. Al-Afghani commented on LeBron James, Caitlyn Jenner, the Ashley Madison website, and, for some reason, South Dakota. But with the recent publicity, Match.com appears to have suspended his account. And I'm suspecting now that South Dakota's on high alert. Okay, call me old-fashioned, call me behind the times, but while I'm totally against torture, I have a problem with supposed enemies of the state getting some of the comforts of modern living. While there are still questions about whether people should be detained in such a fashion at Guantanamo Bay, I don't understand how somebody who has been in a maximum security facility should even know about LeBron James or Caitlyn Jenner. His points of pop culture references should have ended with the date the iron gates closed behind him. Either that, or go to the other extreme and force him to watch The Kardashians and Here Comes Honey Boo Boo on a continuous loop. But then again, I've already gone on the record of saying that I'm against torture. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Kids sometimes do the strangest things. For every parent who has wondered why his or her child chews on objects, frequently bumps into things, rocks constantly, throws stuff, falls, prefers not to wear clothes, or can't seem to settle down at home or in the classroom, there are answers from Letha Marchetti. She's an educator and neurodevelopmental occupational therapist. And Letha joins us on the line right now from San Francisco. Hi, Letha.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Now, when we're talking about the baffling behaviors of some children, I want to see if we can clarify this. Are we talking about children who are nowadays considered what would be in the normal spectrum of childhood development, or are we talking about kids who are on the autistic spectrum of childhood development, or both? What are we talking about here?
Peter, that is such a great question, and I think every parent can identify whether their child's on a spectrum or neurotypical or anything else, that there are times that that child's behavior is just flat-out baffling. You know, when you come in and your son has pulled all the cushions off the couch and he's jumping onto them, and you tell him, son, we don't do this in our home, and you turn around and he's jumping on the bed. And the parents scratching their head, you know, why doesn't this kid get it? That's a baffling behavior.
Well, but the thing that I find interesting, and by the way, I should preface this by the fact that I'm not a parent, but I have been heavily involved in nieces and nephews, and I have been an uncle since I was 7. So there have been a lot of kids in my life. And the thing, I don't know if I find it necessarily so baffling, because weren't we all kids? I mean, we can all think back to something we did that now, as we look at it as an adult, we go, well, gee, I can see how my parents might think that's strange, but at the time, I didn't.
Exactly. Well, here's the problem, Peter. There's certain things that cultures, and, you know, our culture is going through a big shift here, the cultures consider wrong or unacceptable. So this slapping the arms, you know, the child gets to a doorway. She stops and she slaps her arms. And the parents and or the teacher are aghast. It looks like autism. We can't have this. So we push the child's arms down and say, it's okay, honey, go right in. Well, what the parents and teacher didn't know is that that rapid movement of the arms sends signals to the brain that says, this is where my body is. It's not just like a nervous habit or autism. It's a desperate call from the nervous system to bring control into the system. And really what we ought to do is say, well, sweetie, you look like a hummingbird. Can I fly with you? Let's fly in. And help the child gain control of that movement that is needed to help development proceed.
In this day and age, because I'm going back to the 60s and 70s and 80s when the kids I'm referring to were growing up, but that's when books started coming out. There was all kinds of books, Dr. Spock's book, lists goes on and on and on. In this day and age, we have even more information with the internet. Is part of the problem, as parents, we have too much information? We're trying to read too much into what our children are doing?
That's a good question, Peter. I'm sure with some parents that that's the case. You know, I think part of the challenge is, you can imagine, this is my field, I do my best to keep up with it. You can hear and read just about anything. And how is a parent or teacher to know what's right? It begins to make you buggy after a while. You know, your parent says, you know, when I raised you, you had more discipline than this. You need to spank that boy. And your friend says, I would never spank. You know, that makes problems. Somebody else says, time out. That's the answer. And then your pediatrician says, well, it turns out time out isn't really so great for the child. And the parent's saying, how will I know the truth even if I hear it?
Yes, exactly. I give you an example. I mean, one of my nieces, because what made me think about giving you a call in the first place was in listing some of those things that children do, and one of the ones I mentioned was rocks. I have a niece who used to rock all the time, and her mother would go like, is there something wrong with this child? And this is, like I said, we're literally going back to the late 60s. Is there something wrong with this child? Why is she always rocking? And my mother would just say, just put her in the rocking chair.
Your mother had it. See? You know? And your mother trusted her intuition, her gut instinct. Your mom was right. And here's the thing. The child who rocks, there's those things in the inner ear that have to do with head position and feet into balance and all of that. And for whatever reason, most of us have a little glitch or more somewhere in our development. That girl needed that stimulation to her inner ear. And if people had said, oh, well, this is wrong, you can't do that, then she'd never get it, and it would hold up her development. But giving her more of it, putting her in the rocking chair, and even encouraging it would help her go through that area of development that she so needed to where she doesn't do that kind of stuff so much. And maybe it goes away completely.
Okay, so where do you draw the line with kids' behavior when it comes to certain situations? I mean, you know, if your kid does the things that I mentioned earlier in the introduction and does them around the house, you can say, well, just let the kid be the kid in the house. It's an entirely different situation in the classroom or in a restaurant.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. And I have a book, Dragons and Daisies, Keys to Resolve Baffling Behavior. It's on Amazon, and it goes into more detail on this stuff. And what I want to say right now about this, behavior can be frightening, socially unacceptable, just plain weird. So let's say the child is chewing his shirt. His sleeve is wet from the shoulder all the way to the wrist. Well, that's not so great. We don't really want the skin to be wet like that. We don't want the child to have this, you know, we don't want to chew shirts. So the answer to the question is, what can I give this child that meets the need that is socially acceptable? Can he chew gum? Simple as that.
It's funny because, again, years ago, it seems to be the biggest issue was when do you take away a child's security blanket? When do you stop a child from sucking his or her thumb? Now there seems to be so many things that we have to concern ourselves with because in a lot of regard, we're really, really watching our children. Kids don't necessarily get a chance to go out and explore the world as they used to before. Things are done where play dates are designed, and every moment of a child's life is in an agenda or schedule in some way, shape, or form. So kids don't really get a chance to discover who they are or are not.
This is the helicopter parent thing, huh?
Kinda, yeah.
I just so believe in having life be sort of a natural thing. It used to be children would play outside. It was not a big thing for a child to climb a tree. They got that thing in the inner ear stimulated when they swung and went up the tree. They learned how their body works. They felt what it's like to tug and pull. We've insulated our children, and it's not good. We need to let them explore and kind of come to their own answers and feelings about things. It helps development.
I remember as kids, especially little boys, they tend to stand up on the swings. And I'm aghast now at that because I used to do it too. And it's like, wow, we did things that people, if they saw us do it now, just the simple playground. I mean, I wrote a blog post a little while ago about the fact that it seems to be the only place you see monkey bars now are in Al-Qaeda training films. The things that we saw in parks and for kids have completely disappeared.
Wow. Well, you know, that could be more so where you live. Out here on the West Coast, there is a big move to massive play structures. People put them in their homes. They have slides and swings and climbing walls with the phony rocks poking out. And a lot of places in the malls, there's big play equipment. And even in the summertime, fountains, and the kids like to run in and out of them. I think at least out here in the West Coast, things are moving forward. Yay!
Excellent. Now, you mentioned a book. The book is called?
Dragons and Daisies, Keys to Resolve Baffling Behavior. And you'll like it. You know, I designed this to be something that could be read in an evening with an aha on every page. And the reviews are fabulous.
Excellent. So it's Dragons and Daisies, Keys to Resolve Baffling Behavior.
They are.
And people can also find out information on your website, too?
Yes. Find me at occupationaltherapy-letha. That's L-E-T-H-A. And probably the easiest way is just find me on Facebook, Letha Marchetti. That's L-E-T-H-A. And then Marchetti is M-A-R-C-H-E-T-T-I. If you get close, it'll pop it up. And you'll know you're there because it's all about children and just packed with tips and encouraging information.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Letha, for being on the program. This was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Peter.
Educator and neurodevelopmental occupational therapist Letha Marchetti. Again, her book is Dragons and Daisies, Keys to Resolve Baffling Behavior in Early Childhood Education. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0319, and you'll find links to Letha's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A growing number of people are getting slapped these days in an effort to keep them from talking. They're not getting slapped in the face, though. They're getting slapped with a lawsuit. There's a new kind of lawsuit called the SLAP. It stands for Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participation, and they're a new threat to free speech. SLAP lawsuits have been filed against large companies and average consumers, so no one is immune. The purpose is to intimidate and silence critics through costly litigation. Here are some examples. A company might be sued by a former employee who did something wrong and wants to keep the employer from giving an honest reference. Or a guest of a restaurant might be served with a SLAP lawsuit after giving a negative review online. The common theme is that the lawsuits are being used to bully people from using the right to free speech. Let's be fair. This has become such a serious issue that a diverse group of law professors from across the United States is calling for reforms to end SLAP lawsuits. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about having fun at work. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. When 54-year-old Susan Marie Surrett appeared in court in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, by video feed to have her bond set on a charge of disorderly intoxication, she had a couple of things to say to the judge. For one, she told Judge John Hurley she prefers to go by the name Kayla Cupcakes and noted she works as an escort and a model. I'm sure it's more on the escort and less on the model, but that's just me. Her second statement was silent. She lifted her top and exposed herself to the judge. Judge Hurley apparently didn't rule on that particular motion. He simply set her bail at $100. Okay. Susan, or Kayla, or whatever she wants to be called by, is a boob in every sense of the word. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest, shall we? Ever wonder how companies like Google, Zappos, and Southwest develop winning workplace cultures with high productivity and profitability? Regardless of the industry, there is a common thread running through the highest performing companies: the inherent or stated culture of fun. Nick Giannoulis created the Fun Department, which specializes in employee engagement, team building, and corporate events. He's also the co-author of Playing It Forward, the definitive how-to model for creating a winning workplace culture. Nick joins us on the line right now. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm great, Peter. How about yourself?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. We're going to be in a point in time where the millennials will be taking over from us baby boomers, although we're still hanging on there. And they have a different work ethic and idea of what it's like to be within the workplace. It's not just about the almighty dollar and working your 40 hours a week, is it?
Now, that's correct. So millennials are really changing the landscape of the workplace, and they're doing it rather quickly. So by the year 2025, 75% of the workplace will consist of millennials. And they work very differently than certainly my generation, the boomers, and other generations previously. So very smart, sharp, fast, but they really want flexibility and they want fun. So it's more about culture for them than any other generation previously.
Well, I was about to ask, is it just a culture thing based on their age? And when I say culture, I'm talking about North America. In other words, this attitude of a little more fun in the workplace, is it also following through in other countries as well?
It is, actually. So we're doing some work in other parts of the world, and we're getting the same feedback and input across the board. So this generation, just by the nature of technology and the way their parents were came through the workplace and their experiences, have just a whole different set of ideals and attitudes towards work.
Because if you remember about, I guess maybe 20, 30 years ago, we would look across, the seas at Japan, for instance, and see how they were working like crazy and putting in overtime in a way that was just, kind of foreign to us here in North America. And their productivity was high. And some people were saying, well, that's how we should be looking. That's how what we should be aspiring to. So are you saying that even in places like Japan, their way of thinking is changing as well?
Well, and the economy in Japan starting to falter, they're certainly looking at changes in the workplace. And one of those is that culture of just work has shifted. And there's a lot of attention being paid, not just because of the millennial population, but just in general in the workplace, that companies that incorporate fun into their workplace flat out outperform their competitors by huge margins. So it's a competitive advantage in business. So it's not just the millennials, but it's the fact that all this data has emerged supporting that fun and a good culture really drives business results. So no matter where you are in the world and you're in business, most people are paying attention to business results, anything that can help with that. So it's a combination of many things, but millennials are certainly help driving it, and probably more so in this country than others, but it's certainly a population to reckon with.
Okay, so a company that's looking into doing this and wants to know what they can do to help improve productivity through a more fun-based culture, how do they go about doing it, and what role do you play as the founder of the fun department in facilitating that?
So a lot of people have validated fun in the workplace. In other words, the why have fun, and have done a great job with that statistically showing these enhancements to productivity and ultimately profitability. So there's a wealth of data there. Our focus has always been on the how-to. So we implement fun in the workplace, and we've been delivering it for years, over a decade of delivering more fun than anyone in the world. So we have a very definite model in science, and we share that in our book, Playing It Forward, and in these nationally accredited workshops that we offer. So there are laws of fun, believe it or not, things that are universally true about fun and that we incorporate in our model and science. It's things like brief. So brevity is important, and continuous, and shifting a paradigm from one or two events a year. These things need to be ongoing, continuous, brief, and also very cost effective. We do not encourage people to spend a lot of money on elaborate productions and all that. It should feel very natural and organic in the workplace to have fun. And so we help design these programs for people and companies, and very effectively help them implement these programs. And that's what drives business results, not an event. Fun, like most things in your business, is a process, not an event.
Okay, you brought up the terms organic and fun, and I find that very interesting because, talking from a personal perspective, I've worked in companies, and to be honest, I never used to go to the company Christmas party because it always seemed like an obligation. It always seemed like a competition. It always seemed like you were there to be seen and not necessarily enjoy yourself. So how do you bring the spontaneity and fun to something so that it doesn't become just another thing at work?
Yeah, it's a great point. And the traditional holiday party, summer picnic that have been on weekends, they feel obligatory, right? And they've really decreased dramatically in popularity over the years. People want to do things on their own time, you know, at personal time. They don't want to do work things. So what we encourage is that fun happens on company time. And again, brief, respective of business interruption. So our sweet spot is anywhere between 5 and 30 minutes. We do things for as long as an hour to an hour and a half tops, but really encourage these things to happen, continuously on company time, and again, brief. And that's when it really starts to become natural and organic, if it's not waiting or putting all this time and pressure into one event to make it, you know, fun or to recognize your employees. It just needs to happen as time goes on. It's a process. And I will preface it by saying that leadership needs to lead the way. Leadership buy-in is our first law of fun. So that's important for a leader to recognize, hey, my people deserve, a break, and we're going to do it in, an organized fashion and be respectful of business interruption. But it is a little bit of recess at work, permission to play. And the enlightened leaders of the day recognize this, and they're getting great rewards as a result.
Okay, give us an example of some of the things an office can do, for instance, during the day that doesn't disrupt too much from the workplace, but yet allows a little bit of fun.
Sure. So, and keep in mind that fun is individual, right? That your idea of fun is different than mine and vice versa. And so recognizing that, we create what we call the shared experience. And we put people through this exercise and process for their department, their company, their group. And they find things that are most in common with their group. And then we design things around that. And as an example, a company I was at yesterday where they found out that dancing was something that they mutually enjoyed as a group. Some people like to spectate. They didn't like to necessarily dance, but they love to watch people dance. So, that's one of the things they found. So they said that on Tuesdays, every afternoon at 3 o'clock, it's going to be a 3 o'clock dance stop. And someone in the office gets to select the music. And for 3, 4, 5 minutes, however long that song lasts, anybody who wants to get up and dance is free to do so. And if you want to just spectate, you're welcome to do that. So that's just, one example. There's things like I always refer people to holidayinitiatives.com. So it's a website where there's a holiday for everything. And just a week or so ago, it was National Smile Week. So one company was counting the number of smiles and had an award for a person for a day or a week. Little, easy, simple things to implement within your workplace. And we have others that are, larger production, and they come with instructions, and we can do them or you can do them yourself. But we really encourage these little things. National Left-Handers Day was a few weeks ago. So you just use your opposite hand for the day, or things like that are just easy to implement.
Sounds like a lot of fun ideas. We have just about a minute, so I want to ask very quickly, what will people find when they look into your book, Playing It Forward?
So an easy step-by-step guide to creating this environment in your workplace. So we have companies that are designing successfully programs just by reading the book. So we're very proud and pleased with it. And we encourage everybody to have some fun at work.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is the Fun Department. And it's thefundept.com, correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Thefundepartment.com. Nick, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, my pleasure. Thanks. Have a great day.
Nick Giannoulis, creator of The Fun Department and co-author of Playing It Forward, the definitive how-to model for creating a winning workplace culture. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0319, and you'll find links to Nick's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man with an apparent case of arachnophobia caused a fire at a suburban Detroit gas pump by putting a lighter to what he says was a spider near his fuel door. He escaped injury and his vehicle suffered little damage, but the gas pump was destroyed. A clerk shut off the pump from indoors and called the fire department. The motorist could be heard on the surveillance video at the Centerline gas station saying, "Is that a spider in there?" The video then shows flames erupting along the car's side, the pump, and also on the pavement. The man darts to safety and later uses a fire extinguisher to put out the flames. A spider, by the way, is not seen. The clerk says he apologized the next day. Well, seriously, whether there was a spider or not, why would you do anything near a gas pump that requires a lighter? Well, one reason and one reason only. Actually, there's two reasons. One is you have a desire to be a future Darwin Fowl candidate, and two, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0319. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0319. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.